Do you have an addictive personality?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely have an addictive personality. I mean, even to the point, like, if, you know, back when computers first came out and you could play Hearts on a computer, I would say, okay, I'm going to start on this project, or I'm going to start working on this sermon, or I'm going to work on this whatever. And then I would say to myself, I want to play 4 games of Hearts, and then I will start. Mm-hmm. 2.5 hours later, I'm still playing the Hearts.
You said you didn't drink. Did you ever think that if you did drink and got the buzz that felt good, you might have been an alcoholic too?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and it was really funny. People are always like, you know, I mean, was this like a religious thing? Or it wasn't. It was just, I just grew up in a family where you just don't do that. You know, I mean, it wasn't like we were threatened with going to hell.
I mean, the drinking.
Right. It's just like, you just don't do that. And so it was just, again, for me, it was the escape that led to the addiction.
Right. So we have you at the Better Business Bureau, mm-hmm. and then you're also a state senator
right.
at the same time.
Yes.
And you could manage time-wise both jobs.
I believed I could, but then you throw in these, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sundays in Vegas every other weekend. You know, I mean, here's what I tell everybody. People always want to talk about the addiction, which I talk about probably more than anyone else, but for me, the downfall was I lost control of my life. I lost control of my life. It's not a blame game, because it's like, well, everybody wanted me to do this and everybody wanted me to do there. I agreed. I mean, I would tell my assistant, like, if it was like, go speak to this nonprofit, I'm like, I'm all in. If it was like, we need you to go to this dinner to sit there and clap your hands appropriately, and, you know, and I was just like, no, that's not my thing. I just lost control of it, because I was trying to do everything that I wanted to do, be everything to everyone, all of those kinds of things. And then that was my break. Now, what I tell people a lot is that my addiction was bad, and I made choices that sent me to prison. Your choices may not ever cause you to go to prison. Your addiction may be that when all roads lead to fishing, you're never going to go to prison for fishing.
Mm-hmm.
But you will lose your family, because you're never at home.
Right.
Your escape. And what I say to people is that if what do you do when you're stressed, and especially if the answer is, and I want to do it alone.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be alone while I'm doing it.
Right. Does it bother you in your public life, which is at the Better Business Bureau and as a state senator, these people do not know who I really am?
Yeah, I mean, there was always, and it was really strange, because that was also part of the addiction, is that, people just shake their heads when I say this, is that I knew who I was. I knew I was an addict. I knew I couldn't stop it. But I would go and I would speak, and I would go to communities and I would do things. And people would say, you know, you're the best senator we've ever had, or that was the best speech I've ever heard. And I remember giving a speech one time at a big political event, and I came off the stage, and there were just people waiting waiting there for me. And they were just going on and on about that was their speech. And I remember my left hand started shaking, of like, I have got to get out of here, and I have got to get into a casino. And part of that thing was, I would be sitting there and I would be saying, it was a motivation. I was angry when I was doing it, when I was playing, of, they don't know who I am. They're saying all of these wonderful things about me, which they believe to be true, and they were moved by the words that I said. But for me to hear the goodness, I could not comprehend, I could not process. Because I knew who I was, and then that would even drive it deeper into the addiction of, I've got to continue to escape this.
But when you wanted to get out of that, when they were adoring you, you wanted to get to a casino. What was the feeling? Why did you have to run? Because that was your peace and comfort there?
That was my escape. That, you know, even if things went bad at the casino, which would add more stress to everything, mm-hmm. but it was, you know, I just have got, I can't deal with people telling me how good I am, because I know how bad I am.
You said you were addicted, but it took you probably a long time to come to that position to admit that you were addicted.
The Okay, this story I have very rarely told in an environment like this, is that there was a time period where in Oklahoma, and this is, I want to make it clear, this was before I was elected, is that they were allowed to do blackjack in the state of Oklahoma. They didn't have dealers. There was a economic bust in Vegas, a lot of unemployed dealers. They brought dealers from Vegas here. They got here. That's when I found the casino. I had never been in a casino, an Oklahoma casino, and went and was walking through it, and I just thought it was nasty. I mean, it smelled. They were not like what they are today. And there was a blackjack tournament going on, and it was like $5. I was like, okay, I'm gonna play this for a little bit, and ended up meeting some people, other players, and it was a multi-night thing. And so we exchange cell phone numbers, and we would text each other and go, okay, I'll try to save you a spot at the table when you get here. And then suddenly, for whatever reason, the blackjack got shut down. Then you had all these unemployed dealers. And so there was a game that started up, and I was invited to, and it was a game in somebody's apartment
in
Tulsa. And it was one of the unemployed dealers, and it was still $5. I mean, there was more gambling going on at people's dining room tables on a holiday weekend than there was going on in this room.
And what years about?
Oh my gosh, I'm going to guess, and I'm really totally guessing. I'm guessing 2008. But we had these rumors that there's a big game in town. There's a big game in town. And, you know, we're like, well, we're never going to get invited. And but we were sitting there. And there was a woman I had got to know fairly well. Her husband did not gamble. So we were invited to the big game. And her husband and I spoke, and he said, I'll meet you guys there. And will you just make sure she gets home? I mean, she'll text, and we'll leave. I said, great, and I'll walk her out, and we'll all leave together. And we got there, and it was literally like something out of a movie. I mean, it was just insane. And there was like 10 tables, open bar, open food. This big event was going on.
In Tulsa.
And I went in, and for those of you who do not play blackjack, this is not going to mean anything, but I'll explain it. She sat at center field. I sat on third base, which is the last player to take cards. And that's kind of an important position because you've seen what else has been played, and you see what the dealer's top card is. And she was sitting center field, and this guy walks up. And I'm on the edge, and the dealer's there, and then there's a wall, and the guy walks between me and the dealer got panicked. And he's got his hands up, like signaling, you know, that he's not, no one's touching anything, but, you know, kind of signaling also, I may need some help here, is that this guy put his hand on my shoulder and put his hand on the wall, and he leaned down and he goes, "You're Rick Brinkley." And I said, "No, I'm not, but I get that a lot." And the woman I was with turned and looked at me, and he said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." And I said, "Don't worry. You're not the first person to have said that." And she looked at me and she goes, "You just denied who you are." And I remember inside saying, "Yeah, this whole experience is me denying who I am." And that's when I knew I knew how bad it was, because I was, and I think a lot of us deny who we are because I was not the bad guy.
So at that point, then, you knew you were out of control, and I asked you first, when did you feel you were addicted, and is that the moment?
Well, I probably felt it a little bit before, but I think that was the big confirmation, is that, and what I was about to say was, is that when I was not the bad guy, I was always the guy who made the right choices, and you know, even in the legislature, I would talk to members and go, "We don't do that here. That's not the way we behave." You know, I mean, and what I did was, I was amazingly a master at compartmentalizing. I mean, my gambling was in a box over here. You know, and one of the things that I ended up kind of skipping around here a little bit, I ended up in a rehab, and we can talk about that later, but the point of it was, is that they said, picture your life. And because of my background in TV, what I always pictured was my watching my life, even before this guy asked me, in a director's booth where all the monitors are up and you're seeing every camera. And in my director's booth, there is my work, there is my Senate, there is my grandson, there is my son, there is my involvement in this organization, there is my involvement in my church. But over here in the bottom right-hand corner, where there was supposed to have been a monitor, there was a combination safe. And I'll say this as cleanly as I can. And that's where all the crap went. Mm-hmm. And because people would always say to me, you let things roll off of you. You don't take anything personal. And people would, like, especially in politics, people did really horrible things. And I would always just say, my life is too short to deal with their crap. Mm-hmm. But the reality was, is that I wasn't, yeah, it was correct. I wasn't dealing with it. I was pushing it over into that safe. And one of the things in there was my gambling. And, you know, and I will tell you, people at home are probably thinking, what a hypocrite. On one hand, he's talking about being a minister and he's talking about God. Then he's talking about addiction and he's talking about going to prison. Where's this hypocrisy in all of this? And there's no doubt there's hypocrisy in all of this. But God and I have talked to each other like he's sitting next to me in the car since I was in the fourth grade. And so God and I have conversations all the time. And I'm not saying that I hear his voice or he's appearing in front of me. I'm not saying that. I still remember I was in the Senate and I had this really cheap apartment to stay in during session. And I was laying in bed and God and I were having conversations. And God said to me, when are we going to talk about your gambling addiction? And my response back to God was, you can have everything, but you can't have that.
Mm.
And I remember as I said it in my head, how screwed up is this? Mm-hmm. But I was dead serious. You can have everything, but you cannot have that.
You were in deep doo-doo, weren't you?
Yeah, I was.
And you knew it.
I knew it. And, you know, there was all of these conversations about me being the pro tem were going on. But it would be so funny. I would walk into, when you walk into the chamber of the Senate, the portraits of all the other pro tems are hanging there. And I remember I would walk by them and every day I would go, this is never going to happen. Mm-hmm.